We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Happy Labor Day. It's Monday morning after a god-awful weekend against the Baltimore Orioles. No other way to put it. You lose 2 out of 3 at home. Easily could have been swept if not for the extra inning win on Friday. I fully blame you, Scott, for this. The Yankees are 9-7 against the Orioles, which is unacceptable. They're going to lose over 100 games this season. And the Orioles have had the most success against any team against the New York Yankees this year. 7 wins. That's the most success they've had against any opponent in Major League Baseball is the New York Yankees.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You can't possibly blame me for this one because this is like the third year running where I have actually said that the Yankees should sweep this team through the season. And I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong. We're talking about a game, not practice. I just watched some Ted Lasso, by the way. I'm catching up on that. And obviously he referred to the great Iverson press conference. That was awesome. But absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. The Rays are doing it. Why can't the Yankees do it? The Rays are doing it, so therefore, why can't the Yankees do it? The Yankees have done it the past couple of years. This is a bad team. It's not a different team. It's a very, very bad team. Just watched their AAA play last night, too. They were bad. They're just bad overall. It's a bad organization. There's no reason the Yankees shouldn't win every single game against this franchise. So
everybody is mopping the floor with the Orioles. The Red Sox scored 30 runs in 3 games and swept them a couple weeks ago. Okay, everybody is just absolutely demolishing the Orioles. And it's not just, Michael Kay pointed this out on the Sunday broadcast. It's not just the fact that the Yankees are 9-7, which is terrible. It's that these games are closely contested and they're slogs. They're long games.
But that's what every game is for the Yankees this year. They're in so many of these contested games.
Tightly contested is one thing, but they're out there battling the Orioles like it's the Rays, it's do or die every pitch. Like, this is a minor league team that the lineup is better, much better than the pitching staff.
Their offense was surprisingly putting up numbers when you look at the individual stats. So,
but
Mullins kid's good.
Two pitchers I absolutely never heard of, no hitting the Yankees into the seventh inning on Saturday. Like, what is going on? How is this happening? It's a total reversion. Is that a word? Reversion to the first half of baseball. That's what this weekend looked like.
Yeah,
pretty much that's what it's looked like since the 13-game win streak ended, frankly.
It's true. It's true. It's almost like it was a ruse. It was like, haha, just kidding. This 13 game. I was talking to multiple people over the about this team over text message as well, because it's infuriating. But when you're looking at what this team is, and I know that we've given some pats on the back to Aaron Boone over the past month because of what has happened since really the trade deadline. Since the All-Star break, we'll go back to the All-Star break. Fine. Go back to the All-Star break. Dealing with COVID in a much larger capacity, it hit this team immediately. And then you get a couple extra players over, and the team just seemingly had changed. The energy around the team was different. Just like, there were a lot of things different. The team was actually playing very well. In fact, they were going scorched earth on everybody else, 13 games in a row. Is it fair to say that unless this team is going scorched earth and nothing matters, absolutely nothing matters, because their talent is actually showing all at the same time and they go scorched earth, that they have a very difficult time? I have zero confidence in anything, because if Aaron Boone has to be involved in the game at all and really just like have some kind of an integral piece of this, that we're doomed, because that's the way it feels. That's the way it feels after they cool down a little bit. Still should be winning some of these games. Like, these were tightly contested games where, in fact, the Yankees should win all three. You said they could have been swept all three. That's true, but they also should have probably won all three, because they're not a good team on the other side. So I don't know what, still, again, we're in September 6th, and I have no idea what this team is.
That's the scary thing. It's that we thought the 13-game win streak was kind of a market correction, in the sense that the team had been mediocre all season, and then the 13 game win streak, even though maybe a couple games broke their way, it was a market correction, right? And we're like, okay, now after that win streak, you just settle in and play good baseball for the rest of the season, and you secure the top wild card spot and you move into the playoffs. But it's just extremes. It's just too polarizing, this team. It's far too polarizing. It's one end where they're, like you said, scorched earth, or another end where they can't beat Baltimore. I don't understand. I have no clue what this team is, like you just said. No clue. I don't know how anyone can. And there's other concerns as well. Loaiza's injury is a massive blow to
Huge.
This team.
Yeah.
He was, as we said, pretty much the only reliable bullpen arm since the beginning of the season that they've had. Britton has been non-existent all season, and when he wasn't injured, he was bad. Chapman has been a wild card, pretty much. Chad Green, do you have confidence in Chad Green?
In a close game, if the ball's in his hand and he's determining that game, I mean, it's really hard to do that. I have more confidence in him than a lot of guys in the bullpen.
He's at the top of the pecking order.
Clay Holmes has scooched his way all the way to the top, pretty much, too. Because,
but none of these guys give me confidence. None of these guys I roll out there in a one run game in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, and I'm like, cool, we got it. No sweat here. Everything is going to be grinded out, sweated out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way it is. You know who's pitching really well and was nasty in AAA? Luis Gil, doing things for
no
reason in other places, on other mounds, not with the New York Yankees. For some reason, he's pitching in another place. Even though the Yankees actually control that contract, control his movement, control the things that he does, he's pitching somewhere else. Smart baseball.
It's a disservice to the organization and the fans.
Absolutely.
That Andrew Heaney organization has a roster spot.
Yes,
Andrew
I know.
Andrew Heaney has a roster spot and is pitching in a one-run ball game, and Luis Gil is pitching in Scranton. It's unacceptable.
It's absolutely unacceptable. And they're talking about Luis Gil, about being stretched out, getting these getting the starters innings, getting the starters workload. Do it in the Bronx. Do it in the freaking Bronx. The fact that Heaney... Look, I know Boone was out of the game at that point, but you know he's still making those calls on Andrew Heaney
coming
in.
Even if he's not, though. So I tweeted out... It's funny. Gary Sanchez hits the two-run home run to put him up three runs. And there's like a little playground, like a five-minute walk from our house. And we have been meaning to take Harrison there because we wanted to put him on the swing. I was like, all right, three-run lead. Seems like the Yankees are going to have it. I'll just pop the game on my phone, listen to John and Susan. And before we even made it to the playground, I'm hearing Andrew Heaney's just melt down. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. I tweeted, don't be mad at Andrew Heaney, be mad at Brian Cashman for keeping him on this roster and be mad at Aaron Boone for continuing to pitch him. And I understand that Aaron Boone had been ejected from that game. However, it's not just yesterday. It's he keeps getting opportunities.
Aaron Boone's still making calls.
And after the game, did you hear what Aaron Boone said after the game about Andrew Heaney?
Yeah, he wants the ball.
He said he felt like he was a victim of some soft contact, and he still is going to get his chances to prove. Like, what are we doing if we can't say we've seen enough of Andrew Heaney at this point? It is September 6th. The Yankees are fighting for their playoff lives, and he is the worst pitcher on the roster. He does not deserve to pitch anymore.
No, he doesn't. He absolutely does not. Every single time he comes in, we know what's going to happen. The game is going to change in a very bad way. So there's no reason for it. The fact that Luis Gil is pitching, when I see the stat lines, when I see people tweeting about how well he's doing, it just aggravates me and pisses me off. And I'm looking squarely at the Yankees brass, the Yankees manager. What are you possibly seeing here that makes any kind of sense? Because it doesn't make sense. It's not a difficult decision either. This is not difficult. This is not a hard choice. This is a very easy choice.
It was so many things went wrong in Sunday's game. It was a 4+ hour game. First of all, Sunday afternoon, it was like a gross day out. It's just like I felt like all day I was just watching that game. The play that Gleyber Torres didn't make in the sixth inning, when it's a routine ground ball, and Mullins?
It wasn't Mullins. It wasn't Mullins. It was
no. Mullins hit the home run off of Abreu, but was it Gutierrez? Whoever it was running,
You should know. It doesn't matter. You know what? I don't know his name. You don't know his name. That's
Gutierrez.
A good reason. But guess
Gutierrez.
What? Guess what? Gleyber should know who he is. Gleyber should have a profile on him. Gleyber should know exactly what he's going to do and how fast he's probably going to get down that line. At least have an idea. The fact that he took his sweet ass time. You know, I remember the absolute rage from people when A-Rod would double pump. This dude doesn't even double pump. He just lollygags and waits and just like takes his sweet ass time and then loops one over. I mean, there was arc in that ball. I've seen Gleyber recently throw some absolute missiles over to first. Couple turns where he's coming across the bag. He lets that thing fly and he shows off the arm that he has. He's got a very, very good arm. And so he chooses not to use it in that way because it's a mental mistake.
It was a domino effect. That play he doesn't make. And then Abreu gives up the two-run home run to Mullins. Now, you can't completely excuse the two-run home run. You shouldn't be giving up two-run home runs. But shouldn't have been in that inning anymore. Which means he had to throw more pitches. Which means he could not come out for the seventh inning. Which means Andrew Heaney pitched the seventh inning. Which means he gave up four runs and the Yankees lost the game. It was like a domino effect from the just boneheaded fall asleep moment that Gleyber Torres had. I'm done with Gleyber Torres. I don't see a reason to continue to put him in the lineup. He's not hitting, okay? His bat is not worth it right now to put him in the lineup for his awful defense. Play Velasquez. Play Tyler Wade.
His name is Tyler Wade.
Play somebody other than Gleyber Torres at shortstop because he's a bad shortstop and he makes stupid mental mistakes.
See, one of the problems with this team, we're back to a construction problem again. When you have Urshela and Gleyber back in the lineup now, you're looking at not as much Urshela, but more so Gleyber. The fact that he doesn't hit and you're looking at that type of profile for him to come in there and be complimentary in the lineup, he's not complimentary in the lineup right now, not even a little bit. Whereas you have a guy like Tyler Wade who's hitting and... you know, but also gives you some defense, but also is he doesn't need to be a superstar. Like it just Velasquez playing out there doesn't need to be a superstar at shortstop. It needs to be a guy that can play the position well, do the small things, run the bases. Not every single position needs to be that superstar type caliber player. And it's like at this point, if Gleyber doesn't, I mean, you can't just end the Gleyber experiment right now. Like you're saying, you're done with him. You can't just end it right now. But if he doesn't show that he's that he's doing something, you know, in the next week or so, you got to make some serious decisions. But even in the midterm, while you're waiting for that, he doesn't need to play every single day. You can mix in some things. You can send some messages. This is where the manager
should have been pulled out of yesterday's game.
This is where the manager
been benched after that game.
Yeah, the manager has to
benched after that play. He needs to be taken out off the field after that play, because the message needs to be: you don't fall asleep at shortstop.
You cannot
fall asleep at shortstop, Glaber, if you want to be a shortstop. You can't fall asleep when you're out there.
Aaron Boone has to fix this. This goes back down to this is a very much a managerial problem, and he's got to adjust and make himself available to these guys so that they have some accountability. It goes back to accountability. We kept talking about that in the first half. And now you're right. When that's a bonehead play from a guy that's not a rookie, not a young guy anymore. He's supposed to be making that play. He knows the situation. He should know who the runner is. And yes, it essentially was a domino effect for 6 runs.
I think you got to end the Glaber at shortstop experiment for this season, because he's not what this team needs for the rest of this season. He's hitting .255, awful. He's slugging .350, awful. He's got a 90 WRC plus, awful. And he's a bad shortstop. What does he provide to this team?
Yeah, he's the thought, the potential. That's what he is. That's what he provides.
But, okay, last year, league average hitter as well.
He has disappeared for 2 years.
We're at... So between last year, 42 games, this year, 102 games, we're at a full season's worth of mediocrity.
I got nothing for you. I mean, Boone's not going to do it. That's the thing. Like, if he's available and healthy, Boone's going to put him out there on a pretty regular basis, no matter if he's playing well or not. I don't think there's an accountability factor here that says, okay, you're not playing well. The guy that's really, really hungry, or the other guy that's been in the organization for 50 years and is finally starting to actually play well, they're not going to play because you're the anointed one. You're the one that's supposed to be playing. You're the one that everybody wants to succeed.
What is he anointed for at this point? You can't call him the anointed shortstop. He's...
But he is in the organization.
2019... He hit the 38 home runs.
Yes, he had a power surge, and since
he was the shortstop in 2019. Correct. Okay, since then he's been bad. So I don't know why you just say he's still the anointed shortstop.
I'm not saying that that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the organization, I think, still thinks that. Unless we got Andrew Volpe coming up in the next year, which. The kid's on the fast track. Who knows? But yeah, that's exactly what the situation is right now. Tell me why he's playing otherwise.
Yeah. You can't put
he's
the
not the best shortstop on the team, like at all. We know he's not the best defensive shortstop. And right now, with the way Tyler Wade has been playing over the last month, he's not the best offensive shortstop. Bottom line, like, it is what it is. We can laugh about Tyler Wade all we want. Laugh about Tyler Wade being this guy that's been a frustrating dude forever and ever. But he's playing extremely well. And he's played well when given the opportunity to be in the lineup and in the game more consistently. He's shown, at least recently, that his bat is good for what he's adjusted. He's made those adjustments and become a valuable piece. I will say it. He's been a valuable piece. So that keeps him off the field now with Glaber. That's the conversation we're having.
Yeah, and Gary had the massive offensive day on Sunday, the grand slam and the two-run home run. Otherwise, the team did nothing offensively. They left 7 on base as a team. Voit was terrible in some big spots. And so it's just, I don't know, Gallo's been struggling.
Gallo's been struggling. Gallo is exactly who we thought he was going to be. Gallo is a guy who either hits a moonbeam or strikes out 95 times. He looks lost half the time. And then when he connects it, you're like, my God, that was majestic and beautiful. He's still taking his walks.
Under 200 as a Yankee for batting average. I don't understand how this team won 13 games in a row and then can do this. I don't get it.
I mean, yeah, and we watched those games too. Those games, things were going the way of the Yankees. They were hitting, they were pitching, they were When you look at the Orioles series and you break it down to the way that, I mean, obviously it was, the pitching failed them in multiple ways.
Kluber was not good again.
Kluber was not good. Looks like a guy who's working himself back. He looks like a guy that's working himself back. He's not even throwing all of his pitches.
Again, so Kluber's working himself back at the major league level.
Meanwhile,
they have a pitcher who hasn't given up a run at the major league level pitching in AAA.
It's so stupid.
I don't even necessarily fault them for having Kluber work himself back at the major league level, but get Andrew Heaney off this roster, put Luis Gil in there, and let Kluber work through some things, but don't have also Andrew Heaney come. It's just baffling. I don't know. I don't see how this bullpen is going to survive. I'm so worried about this bullpen.
They need kids. They absolutely need kids. They do. They need some Utes from the AAA to come up, from the Scranton Wilkes-Barre team to come up and be a kick in the ass. They do. They're running out of bodies. The fact that Loaiza goes out. I mean, I put this on Twitter, just looking at what that timeline is. Right. They said 10 days minimum.
No throwing 10 days.
Yeah. So we're looking at best case scenario, 2 weeks of him. Yeah.
That's
not
the end
throwing
of the season.
And he starts
the end
throwing.
Of the season when he's
end of
back.
The year. He's going to be fighting back for the beginning of the playoffs. And maybe that's on purpose. Maybe they're waiting until that point to get the extra rest and understanding that the timeline.
That's
still,
if no setbacks happen.
Right. No setbacks. And
when's the last time the Yankees had a rehabbing player not have setbacks?
Well, this one seems like it's really just like a rest thing, but they got to survive till the end of the year as well. Like, that is not something that we can look beyond.
It's no longer a given. Five days ago, it was a given they're going to be the number one wild card spot. Now they're a half game.
The Mariners won five in a row-ish, right? The Toronto Blue Jays have won four in a row. They're about to
come in for four games against the Yankees. So the Yankees are a half game up on Boston. They're 3.5 up on Seattle, and they're 4.5 up on Toronto, 4.5 up on Oakland. They still have 3 games left with Boston. They have 7 games left with Toronto. I'm sorry. You have to survive. Like you said, you have to survive the rest of the season. And with the bullpen in the current state, I don't see how they're going to survive. It's not a good bullpen right now.
You see that catch from Stanton in right field?
Yeah.
Full body.
And
beautiful.
He got up. He gets up and Judge says something to him. And I replayed it because I was trying to figure out what Judge said to him. I'm like 30% sure Judge said, "Hope you're not hurt."
I mean, that's everybody's thought. If Aaron Judge thought that as well, that makes a lot of damn sense. Because all of us, as soon as he hit the ground, I was like, "Oop, nice catch." Yo, he better not be hurt. He better not be hurt.
I don't care if Stanton's playing. Stanton looks. Doesn't Stanton just look happier that he's playing the outfield?
Yes. He look, because I feel like he's like, finally, I feel like I have some worth. I can do this. I'm a good outfielder. Not a great outfielder, but he's a good outfielder. He plays the position just fine. And yeah, he's just more in the game. He's just more in the game. Like, we're the rhythm of the game. You know, not having to go down into the tunnel and take some swings and just feel there's a very, no nerd will ever tell you this. Nobody can probably put a pin in what this actually looks like, but there's a rhythm of the game. There's a rhythm of the game when you're in and out of the dugout, you're talking to the guys, the pace of the game is there. You're just in it. Your mind is at a different place. And when you're a DH and not, He's not supposed to be a DH. I understand that some guys have gotten this down to a science and it works for them, but I just don't think it works for him. He needs that pace of the game, that rhythm to get into it fully, because I think he sees the ball better when he's doing that and he's really into it and playing right field or playing anywhere in the outfield position.
He said playing the outfield helps take your mind off the at-bats. If you go 0-4, everyone's going to go 0-4, but if you go 0-4 as a DH, you just sit there thinking about your last over.
Right.
Even if you're out in right field and no balls hit to you, you're playing defense. Your mind is in the game focused on something else, and you're not just harping on your last over.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different mentality, and he even identified it. So
you got to go out there and face the music, too. People are going to give you shit. At least it's over. It's happening at that point in real time. Like, you can't possibly think about all those little things when people are just in your ear and you have to play defense and you got to do all these things to be ready as a major league player in the game itself. But if you're in the clubhouse or if you're down in the tunnel taking swings, taking some dry swings, taking some wet swings, all you're thinking about is that last at bat and how you screwed it up and probably overcorrecting your mechanics and doing all these things. And I think that does get him in trouble. You're right. Now that I'm hearing, you know, his comments and like how he mechanically is, sometimes he just looks like an absolute robot and he's hitting everything. Other times he looks like he's chopping at wood in his own head and can't hit a goddamn thing. And a lot of that probably is just overcompensation or overcompensation for a problem that may not exist.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One other thing I wanted to mention was the Gary Sanchez. So Aroldis Chapman blows the ninth inning on Saturday, and the inning started with Gary Sanchez. It was called a wild pitch on the strikeout. It was a borderline wild pitch pass ball in my mind. A better defensive catcher blocks that ball. However, that's how the inning started, and then it led to a run for the Orioles, and the Yankees lost. So another bad outing for Chapman overall, and frankly a bad look for Gary Sanchez, who came into that game pinch hitting for Higgy, didn't do anything while pinch hitting. At least Gary had the massive day on Sunday to sort of make up for that. The Yankees still didn't win the game.
I'm still putting it on Chapman, by the way, not Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, I mean he it was a wild pitch, but
even if you block it,
Chapman's one of the hardest. He's obviously one of the hardest pitchers in baseball to catch, because he doesn't have great control, and he has freaking nasty stuff. So Boone's ejection on Sunday was interesting, and Cohn was talking about this because apparently they heard the conversation from the broadcast booth between the umpire and Boone. And the umpire asked him, as Boone was barking at him, he said, "What are you going off of?" Meaning, are you going off how the catcher received the ball, or are you going off of like a pitch box? Like, are you watching it on replay and like where the actual location was? He kept asking, "What are you going off of?" And then the umpire said, "I don't want to have an ongoing dialogue here." And Boone kept yelling at him. So Boone got tossed. But I found that Cohn found it interesting. And I found it interesting that the umpires are conscious of the fact that there's like different things that'll tell you, okay, was it how the catcher received the ball? Was it where the dot on the pitch box was on the television broadcast? Like, what are you going off of to say that was a strike? It was a strike, but it was at the very top of the strike zone. Pitches at the top of the strike zone routinely get called balls, like probably more than any other pitches that are strikes, because, quote unquote.
But do we know why? Yeah, why? Because it blocks. I think it blocks their view as well. I think it's actually
one
of the harder.
When the catcher goes up to catch it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's one of the harder strikes for an umpire to see who's behind them. Sometimes that adjustment can be, especially if they're setting up low, and they have to move up, and their bodies are moving up at the same time. Your eyes move. Umpire has to move a little bit. I think that's one of the hardest ones because of the human element.
I'm
not saying it for any umpire. I'm just saying for the human element, there's probably more movement in everybody. Granted, this is slight movement, but when you're talking about a ball coming 95-100 miles per hour, then slight movement makes all the difference. You know, that why catchers are trying to bring those back into strikes. But yeah, I think those ones up in the zone, especially if you're set low, they're easily missed.
Yeah, so Boone gets run again. He seems like it happens once a week now.
I think he said, yeah, he's set his own record now for ejections.
There was no shot in the dugout of the guys smiling at him. I guess you only smile when your manager gets run during a 13-game win streak. You don't do it when you're losing to the Orioles at home.
Yeah, I mean, is this one of those ones where you're like, my guys are, I'm surprised there was no, you know, my guys are savages in the box against the Baltimore Orioles. You're not giving them a chance against the Baltimore Orioles. These guys are savages in the box against the Baltimore Orioles. It's kind of a, like, okay.
I don't know. That's all I got for the weekend. Just a lousy weekend of baseball. And I don't know what to expect from this team going into the last 3 weeks of the season. I'm not confident anymore that they can secure a wild card spot at this point.
I mean, of course you're not confident they can secure a wild card spot after what they just did against the Baltimore Orioles. I think anybody who says that they're confident in that is looking at a different team. But these next four games are insanely big. And I'm just looking at the matchups coming up. You got Ryu today against Tyone, because we're recording this on what day is today? Monday. It's Labor Day Monday morning. Tomorrow is Cole going up against Mats, who's having a pretty good year. We miss Robbie Ray, correct? Because I think he pitched last night.
Yeah.
So that's something. The guys struck out multiple, I think, double-digit strikeouts in his last three starts.
I mean,
Robbie Ray?
How in the
He's been in my offseason plans for like the last 2 years.
How in the freaking hell is he in the Cy Young conversation?
He figured out how to throw strikes. This guy's one of his biggest problems while he was in Arizona and wherever else he was, he's had strike throwing problems. When you can figure out how to throw the ball over the plate, usually your stuff plays well. And then we got Berrios for the last four. So these are not, you know, I know we're missing Ray, but these are not matchups that are that are easy matchups by any means.
I know the Yankees haven't played the Blue Jays in a while. I think the last time they played them, the Blue Jays were still playing in Buffalo, and the Yankees swept them. But that was, yes. I think they got a triple play in that series, and some wonky shit happened in that series in order for the Yankees to sweep them. But once again, the whole AL East has been a difficult opponents for the Yankees. They just have not played well against anyone in their division, including Baltimore.
This is a big start for Tyone today too, because you know we were talking about this in our last episode. He has not been good over the last two. This is a big matchup against Ryu, who you could argue he came over to be the constant at the top of that rotation, and he's been good for a long time. So they have a lot of confidence behind him. Obviously, this is a big game. This is a big game to start out the series after what just happened against the Orioles. We need to see the Yankees turn the page and flip the script fast. Need to go back to that good scorched earth team. I don't know how you do that with a drop of a hat next day game after you just got taken two of three at home against the Baltimore Orioles. I don't know how you do that. And Tyone just got to pitch very well today, like bottom
line. Yeah, I mean, it's the old cliche goes, it starts with the guy on the mound. It starts with the starting pitcher. Because
but
if
guess
Tyone
what?
Has this a good start, that gives them some breathing room but if Tyone, again, can't get through the fifth inning, which he has been unable to do his last two starts out, how the heck are they going to get five innings out of this bullpen?
This team, they have four wins in a row. This team, I'm talking about the Baltimore, I'm talking about the Toronto Blue Jays. They're a scary team right now. I've said they were a scary team since spring training, but right now, This team scares the shit out of me a little. As I'm looking at this more, they're scaring me even more, because they have some they got a chip on their shoulder, a little bit of a revenge from the last series against the Yankees. The Yankees just got their asses kicked by the Blue Jays, basically taking a 2-of-3. They're in a vulnerable position. This is a young team, a hungry team at New York in the Bronx that wants to make a mark. Like, these are the types of kids that want to embarrass you when possible. So. Not feeling good about that. I'm not feeling good about that. There's a lot of motivation for them. They're playing well. They see the Yankees in their sights. What are we up? Four games?
Four and a half on Toronto. A half.
Four and a half
on,
with four to play. Like that. That.
Well, no, they have another series.
In this four to play in this series, that's a very clean thing to do when you're looking at the Blue Jays for some bulletin board material.
Yeah. All right. Little half episode on not Memorial Day. I always
Labor Day. Today's Labor Day.
Labor Day weekend. Labor Day Monday. Hope you guys are enjoying the holiday and the weekend. And Scott and I. So it's a busy week for the Yankees. Just like you said, the four games, but also we have the Jeter Hall of Fame speech coming up this week. So you and I are going to do an episode after we hear that and react.
Are you looking forward to it?
I am, and I kind of have high expectations for it, full well knowing I'm going to be let down because Jeter's just going to be very, like, Jeter-y, I think. I don't think we're going to get anything.
But he's opened up more. He's definitely opened up more and started talking about, you know, certain things. So maybe this is, I think he started doing that with the Players Tribune when that whole thing started. That was, the year after he retired? And then he has kids now, so there's a lot more of emotions that are like swirling in this man's brain. We'll see how the composure has changed and how he can do it, because this is going to hit the nostalgia button really hard for everybody. There's going to be a lot of people there watching him, you know, supporting him, and he's not going to be able to do this by just like staring out, not at a screen. I know there's been a whole bunch of things, right? The voicemails. What he's going to do, I think, is go back to the stories and then like turn it on people. And that's how he gets through those moments, rather than like all being him. He'll turn it and he'll talk about the impact, and he'll talk about the things that certain people did for him, and then turn it into like a little bit of a story joke. And then he'll deflect in that way.
He'll definitely have some self-deprecating humor in the speech. Over under time on the speech. What do you put in
there? What's an average speech? I don't know what an average.
I don't know.
Speech, like, what was Griffey's?
5 minutes. I'd say five minutes.
I'd say over five minutes. If I were to guess, it would be around 10. But I don't even know if I'm close.
I think that might be long. I feel like
he had a long freaking career. He had a long career. There's a lot of people going to say a lot of nice things about him. He's got a lot of people to thank. There's a lot of things that went on. You know, the kid from Kalamazoo all the way through all those championships with the Yankees, and now he's started a whole other, you know, baseball life with the Marlins. Like, he's got a lot to cover. Here,
how much, if any, of the speech will have the Marlins in it?
I think he'll tie it to just how baseball is continuing and how he learned everything from the Yankees organization and is applying that. I don't even think he'll say the name. I don't think he'll say the name Florida Marlins
just in
his speech.
A new organization or something.
I think he'll just say it's influenced how I have continued my baseball career or something like that. Like, he'll just like allude to it but not say it.
Does he mention?
He'll go back into the Yankee ways, like immediately.
He obviously will thank George Steinbrenner, Joe Torre, probably Joe Girardi as well, since he did win a championship.
Stick Michael. I bet Stick Michael gets a shout here.
Does Buck Showalter get a mention?
No.
He'll mention, obviously, his teammates, Posada, Pettit, Mariano. Those are the core four. Bernie hopefully gets a mention.
Bernie's part of the core. Yes, he's part of the core.
But he's not the core four.
That was a
marketing thing.
That was a very
Bernie Williams.
Yeah. Why am I completely missing this guy's name? Steiner Sports. That was a Steiner Sports thing. Who marked them the core four? They are the core five. I don't care what anybody says.
Does A-Rod get a mention?
No. Very strategically not.
So it's because it's like obviously the glory days were without A-Rod, and then the one chance.
I think he's going to talk a lot about his parents. I think he's going to talk a lot about his parents.
Definitely.
He may bring it back to the 2001 World Series, and like in that moment, like just because the emotions are here and that's coming up.
Like getting drafted and stuff. Actually, if you guys didn't listen, I did a history episode on how Jeter fell to the Yankees. At number five, not really, you know, falling, but like he fell at number six, right? Because like it was called the Jeter Five, so I believe five players were taken ahead of Derek Jeter, and just like how that draft process went, I go check that out.
We should probably re-release some of the Jeter-centric histories.
All right,
yeah.
We'll repost the Jeter one on Wednesday morning, the day of the speech. That was the only Jeter-centric one I think that I did, but. He'll definitely thank all of those people. Yeah, I don't think A-Rod gets a mention either. But it's interesting, like, I think he'll talk about his five championships maybe in general. Does he like talk about specifics from those teams or anything? I'm not sure.
I think the championships one are an opportunity to talk about his teammates and all of those things coming up. But I also think all of the postseason and the moments, and that's why I think potentially there will be some discussion, and maybe he'll I don't know if he'll directly talk about it, but I think because the anniversary, the 20-year anniversary of 9/11 is coming up, I think that there's going to be some type of mention around that World Series just because of the way that the fans in the city pulled together. And I think he's going to talk about the fans and how they were such an integral piece of him growing up through baseball, and the fans really just embraced him from day one. So I think he's going to do some nods to that. And talk about how the fan base was a big piece of this. So I think there's going to be those postseason, the moments to bring up the postseason are going to be great moments to talk about the fans, great moments to talk about the teammates. So that's where I think he's going to talk about the championships.
Lineup was just released for today. Gary Sanchez is no longer batting ninth, even though he got briefly demoted to the number nine spot for a couple games.
Is Gleyber all right playing?
Yes. Gleyber's hitting seventh, starting at shortstop. It looks like Stanton's DH. All right, that's going to do it for today. We'll be back at you with a couple more episodes this week. Talk to you then.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.